Hello. We have a great lineup for our Kings and Queens of King Street panel. Some of you may have been here 3 years ago in this very room when we had our first Kings of King Street panel. We tried to get more queens, but Pinky, you're the only one who said yes. So that's a big responsibility, but I think you can handle it. I'm going to do exactly what I did last time because we have 1 hour. We've got 8 panelists, and do the math. We don't have much time. So I'm going to start. We've arranged ourselves alphabetically. I'm going to start at the far end of the table and ask each panelist to introduce him or herself, give us a 5-minute summary of the history of their business or the family business. You're welcome to use visual aids to describe what's happening now. You know, we've just had an hour's worth of kind of a scary look of what the changes that have happening before our eyes. And I'll then use my privilege to ask a question or two, but I know people in the audience have questions, and you may also have things you want to show. I know Mr. Bernstein brought some materials. Just my directions to the panelists, if you would literally hold this against your mouth.
I've got a big mouth. I can probably, okay. Can hear me.
This mic does not work if you hold it even over here.
Okay.
Maybe see the difference. And please feel free to stand up if you're comfortable with that. Yeah, I think the audience wants you to stand up. So we're going to start with Steve Berlin. 3 years ago, we had Henry. Hope he's doing well.
Doing okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Steve Berlin. Run Berlin's for Men on King Street. We've been in business 134 years. We're going to celebrate 135, God willing, next year. My great-grandfather started the business, Henry Berlinski. That's my father's name after. Then my grandfather, Sam Berlin. And then my Uncle Alan and Henry ran the business for years. And then I came in after I graduated the Citadel and ran the business till now, till present. I've been there 36 years. And I haven't messed it up yet. But thank God, if people want service and quality, they come to us. If they don't want service and quality, I'll lock the door. That's all I've got to offer. I'm not the cheapest in town, not the most expensive, I'm not the cheapest either, but I'm going to give you all the service you can get. I've got twin boys, 8 years old. I know y'all looking at me. The guy this age have kids that young. I was blessed. They're the love of my life. My father is doing okay. He wish he could be here. My mother's taking care of him. She's driving him crazy, so he'll be around a long time, as long as she drives him crazy. But Berlin's has been in my family a long time. We've seen a lot of changes on King Street. We've seen a lot of family businesses close down, unfortunately. The rents have a lot to do with that. And thank God we own our own building, so we'll be around as long as we want to. But I just wanted to thank everyone for being here, and hopefully we'll be here next year. Thank you very much.
I can attest to everything he said. Everything I'm wearing is
not. Very good. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, good. That's 135 years. It's a tough act to follow.
Wow.
My name is Ben Chase, and I was born in Charleston, and my family had a furniture store on King Street for a lot of years, but I wasn't able when I was younger to work at the store. When I was 12, I started working on King Street. I worked for Herman Olshan, otherwise known as Wiggy, and I used to sell shoes for Wiggy, stretch them out in the back to make them fit, and comb out wigs. So although I started with a lot of different merchants, matter of fact, I put a number of our panelists through college. I think I worked at Bob Ellis and put Barry through college. I tell the Rovics when I worked for George's Loan, I put their Allen's boys through college. because I was working at those stores on King Street. My father wouldn't let me come into the business until I was well seasoned. And I think that was one of the most rewarding things, is learning other people's businesses and how they operated, because I learned from all the merchants that I work with. You know, from the Rovics, Morris Kalinske, and Barry's family. Everyone that I worked for, a couple of clothing stores. I worked for Richards at one time. So I worked my way up and down King. I used to work at a restaurant at King and Wentworth for Wiggy, and learned the restaurant business there. And I was seasoned enough to come to work after I finished college at the College of Charleston. I've got two children, 17 and 20, and they're testing me now. I did. There are a couple of things, maybe just one story I can relate, or a couple of small stories about how business was on King at the time, because when I was on King Street earlier in the 70s, people didn't go north of Calhoun. Everyone was just, it was basically a wall for anyone in Charleston, and they just stayed south of Calhoun, and we used to call a slow day on King Street a 38 special. And what that meant was you could shoot a 38 down the street and you wouldn't hit anybody. I don't know that that's true today. It's pretty busy today. Just one little story that might get you going. I used to put out the shoes for Wiggy on Saturdays when I worked in the summers, because I was only 12. I was going to school, but I worked weekends. And we used to put the shoes on the sidewalk, one of each size, so we could display the shoes. And what we would do is we would rotate them so they, one shoe wouldn't get completely sunbaked. So I was always responsible for getting the shoes out and taking them back in. So one day when I took them back in, I realized that I didn't have a mate for one of the boxes that I had. And it just boggled my mind that I couldn't find this shoe. And he said, "It's out there, Chasey." I said, "No, I'm telling you, I got them all in the box. It's gone." And so we said, "All right." So next Saturday, I put out the other one. And you know, that afternoon, that second one was gone. And what I learned about that experience was there wasn't a one-legged man out there. If there were other people out there smarter than we were. Okay? And there are still plenty of people out there smarter than we were. Enjoy your weekend.
My name is Nikki Bluestein. I own Bluestein's Menswear. And I'm going to start at the beginning. My great-grandmother came to Charleston in 1883, 84, 85. The date is cloudy. My daddy never knew exactly what the date was. And she came from either Rome or Macon, Georgia. And the reason for that was there was no synagogue there, and Charleston was a big Jewish community. So she came here. She was a peddler. And then she moved. She opened the store going a little bit south on my present location. In 1907, she purchased the property, and she ran the business with her two boys. One was my grandfather and his brother. And I asked my daddy years ago, I said, "Well, where was my grandfather?" But in those days, the Jewish men didn't work. They studied the Torah, and the women ran the business. And so somewhere along the line, my grandfather and they purchased the property in 1907. My grandfather and his brother had a disagreement. My grandfather outbidded his brother, and which was Hyman Bluestein, who ended up going to Columbia. And he raised a family there. And 1913, which is the date, if you ever go by the building that you see on the outside of the building, there was a store on the corner, and right next to it was a Charleston single-family home. And in 1913 is when my grandfather restored it, and he put the blue brick on and made them, if you'll notice this, a difference in the height. And he made them one building. In 1987, the store burned down, except for the facade. And the only reason, the facade, about 29 feet of brick on both sides, and the only reason the facade was still standing was because the background and supports were cast iron. So, and then I rebuilt the building back in the city of Charleston. Revitalization moved up there. And for many years, matter of fact, Sammy Kirstein and myself tried to get the city to move into the Upper King Street area. And I offered them my space for free. With the fire, we worked out a deal. They moved up there and they paid me rent then. And I've heard a little bit of negative about retail business on King Street, and from Steve Berlin and myself, I disagree. You change and you need to adapt to the new customers, or you're not going to be in business. And it's just like anything in life, you have to change. And my business is very good, his business is very good, and because you make changes. So I think King Street has a bright future. I really feel that way. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Binky Cohen, and my family own Reed Brothers at King and Spring Street. Grandfather was originally in Monk's Corner, and that was wild and woolly out there, and grandmother wanted to move into the city, and so he did, and at the same time, his brother-in-law, Mendel Dumas, who was in Bunno, moved in, and they opened Reed and Dumas at 593 King Street. They were in business for a couple of years. The top of the building says 1912, but we really can't find anything in old newspapers or records that say anything about the store until about 1914. But it's been there a long time, over 100 years. It was originally a 5 and 10 cent dollar store. In around the 1920s, the late 1920s, my father and his brother, Dan, who had been a doctor in Monk's Corner, when it bought the business from grandfather, and they ran it together until the 1950s when Daddy bought out Uncle Dan. And Daddy was in there until he was 96 years old, running, that was 1999, running the business. He carried everything in his head. We ask him, why didn't you write it down? But he did. I'll tell you, it was a thriving business until, and did a lot of business with the Navy base, the Navy relief. When the base closed in, in 1996, because Senator Nunn from Georgia moved the Polaris sub base to Georgia, and then they were closing Navy bases, and so they closed our Navy base, and business changed. My brother, who was a music graduate of Harvard and also a graduate of Trident Tech, had the stereo business, which he still has. And when Daddy died, Tommy took over. And it's still there. And contrary to what was in the newspaper recently, the building is sound. It is not falling down. A structural engineer from the city came the very next day and looked over everything, and he tested everything. However, the building that is two doors down that belongs to Tom has some structural damage to it. So, but not the main old building. Anyway, as far as changes go, everywhere, I can remember when there was the Army-Navy store that was two doors down, and Hill Sloan's Cleaners and Altman's Furniture, which has evolved into the legal part on the second floor and the bicycle part on the first floor. But there were, and Mrs. K's Sunshine was across the street, down the street. Everything has evolved up in that section to hotels to bars to restaurants. I would not want to live near there because it's very noisy at night. But it is what it is, and time marches on, and I don't know why my brother doesn't sell. I ask him, but he's never going to sell. They'll carry him out of there. I tell him that his wife, Marion, I said, on the way back from the cemetery, honey, she's meeting with the realtor. And I thank you. I still go in there about once a week and bring the books up to date, and I do the bank statements and get everything ready for the accountant once a month, and that is my input these days. And I went to work there when I was 12. If your parents had a business, the children worked on Saturdays, and I used to walk when I was about 14. I used to walk down King Street to see all the boys who worked at Friendly Department Store, at Chase Furniture Store, at Max's Men's Store, and then I met my girlfriends and we had lunch. I thank you very much.
My name is Leonard Goldberg. My father was Abe Goldberg, who owned and operated a furniture store at 526 King. The name of the furniture store was I Am Goldberg and Brother. The basis of that name was I Am Goldberg came to Charleston in 1910 and started a furniture store. He came from a small town outside Warsaw called Kalashin. The I Am Goldberg and Brother was I Am and his brother J.L., and they did very, very well. Unfortunately, the first I Am died young in his 30s of kidney disease, and the partnership dissolved. J.L. started his own furniture store, and my father took over the I Am Goldberg and Brother furniture store. He stayed in business for 40 years and did very, very well. If you look at King Street back in those days, between Calhoun and Spring, there were 9 to 10 furniture stores. The vast majority were owned by Kalashinas. These were people who came from Kalashin, Poland. Whether it was the Sokols, or the Goldbergs, or the Kirsteins, or the Altmans, they all came from Kalashin. That area, which I just described, was where everybody not only worked, but lived. Between Spring and Calhoun, that's where all the Jews in Charleston, for the most part, lived. They raised their families there. They could walk to work. They came home for lunch. Time passed, of course, and eventually the migration out of the area began. In the late 40s and 50s, people began moving up to the north area of Charleston, not North Charleston, the north area of Charleston around College Park, and across the bridge to Burnstown and South Windermere. And the Kalashin society, the Kalashin population between Spring and Calhoun dissipated and virtually disappeared. To this day, to the best of my knowledge, there is only one Kalashina furniture store still in existence on King Street, and that's Dixie Furniture, run by the Kirstein family. Let me share with you just a brief story about Kalashin, which I think you will find interesting. Kalashin was a small town south of Warsaw that had 6,000 Jews. In the late 1800s and 1900s, about half the population migrated out to America, to Palestine, at the time it was called Palestine, and to South Africa. Population was then 3,000. Those who stayed behind were to meet a very unpleasant fate. For World War II started, and the Nazis came in and kill the Jews of Kolosheim. They killed all of them, except for 1,000 that they marched off to Treblinka, where they would die. That was the end of the Jewish presence in Kolosheim. Last week, I got a letter from a great first cousin in Atlanta, Eddie Goldberg, who told me a most poignant story, namely that there is an attempt now to reestablish a Jewish presence in Kolosheim. Joe Gelman, who is a Charlestonian now living in Israel, has visited Kolosheim on a number of occasions. He found the Jewish cemetery, which was vacant, full of weeds, snarled tea, nothing. It was a lot. Somehow he managed to buy that lot. And now he started a fund to build a wall around that lot, as we do with Jewish cemeteries. They are going to hire someone with a radar, ground-penetrating radar, to find the mass grave where all those Jews were buried. And they're going to put up a memorial so that the Jewish presence will return to Kolosheim. If any of you want information on this, just let me know and I'll give you everything you need to know. What's kind of interesting is that the Jewish presence in Kolosheim is about to be reborn. The Kolosheim presence on King Street is about to disappear into the pages of history. Rather poignant, I think. Thank you for listening to my story.
Hi, I'm Barry Kalinske, and my family story goes back to Holly Hill, South Carolina, which is an hour away from here. And my grandfather had the General Dry Goods store in Holly Hill. My aunts were the Lurie family that had the General Dry Goods store in St. George, and the Levinson family who had the General Dry Goods store in Barnwell. So my father was born in Holly Hill, and in 1950 opened Bob Ellis Shoes at 319 King Street. I was able to find the opening ad from the day that we opened, and styles really haven't changed. Prices have. This was from the Post and Courier, February 24th, 1950. And
can you get a good picture of you and the ad, please?
Sure. So, my father opened in 1950. And bought the business from the Ellison family. Now, the most frequently asked question during the 28 years that I worked there was, who was Bob Ellis? And since I've heard 10 different stories, there really is no answer. All I know is that one day I remember as a kid, I was walking through the airport, and I hear this person yelling, "Mr. Bob, Mr. Bob." And my dad turned around and like, "Hi, how are you?" And, you know, he was known as Mr. Bob as well. And then in 1973, I'll never forget this. This is not necessarily a happy part. My grandmother, my mother's mother, passed away. And my brother and I were going down to the store to get shoes for the funeral. And as we were crossing the Ashley River Bridge, we saw billows of smoke coming from King Street. And I looked at Jeffrey and I said, "Do you think the store's on fire?" Well, sure enough, we got downtown, we got onto King Street, and it was police barricaded everywhere. The store was on fire and burned down. And my father at the time was looking for another location. And Clement Furniture Company, which was 332 King Street, happened to be for sale. And I think he paid, I'm not sure, maybe $45,000 for that building in 1973. And it goes to show, out of something bad comes something good, and it turned out to be a tremendous asset. We moved to 332 King Street in 1974, and we stayed there until the end of the year of 2016. My family, we never listed the property for sale, but like some of the others around, we got these crazy unsolicited offers from realtors, and we just decided it was time. So we closed at the end of the year in 2016. It was very, very bittersweet. As a real estate business decision, it was very easy. As an emotional decision, it was very cloudy and very, very difficult because it was the family's legacy. I grew up in the store. My brother grew up in the store. It was the center of our life for many, many years. But it just seemed like the time. I mean, I remember, and I'm sure everyone around here, come Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, the Jewish merchants used to be able to take a full page ad in the paper and say, you know, in observance of religious holidays, the following stores would be closed for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And now we probably couldn't even fill up a quarter of a page. And that's just one of the changes that I've seen over the years. We were very fortunate. We had a very good run. We developed a great clientele that had become friends. I enjoyed every minute of it. And, you know, I still pass there, and it's still an emotional journey for me. I see Jack Alterman here, and, you know, I think of his mother, Elza, and my father, and we always said we should cut a hole between the two stores and call it Bob Elza, but we never quite did that. But so I am I have three children, and I'm currently selling real estate at Carriage Properties, and enjoy it very much. But you know, my heart will always be on King Street. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Sammy Kirstein, and I have a message for you. I graduated from College of Charleston 73 years ago, as a matter of fact, with a degree in chemistry, and that was going to be my life's work. I went to Ohio to work as a chemist, which I did for 2 years. The Army decided to draft me. The whole time I was expecting to be drafted, and so I raced through college. I finished college in 2.5 years, but it was a lot of fun. It was varsity basketball, fraternity, the real college life. I didn't miss out on anything, but unfortunately it was too little too soon. At any rate, when I finished college, I was going to head on to University of North Carolina to work toward a doctorate in chemistry, and my father said, "No, you got to come home and start a furniture business." In those days, your dad ruled the roost. You did what he said. You didn't question it. And I really did not question it. I came home to become a furniture magnate. It didn't turn out not that quickly at any rate. And I just totally immersed myself in the furniture business. When I came downtown to look at the store for the first time, I got a shock. It was one of the most dilapidated looking buildings you ever saw. It was all of 12 feet wide, about 50 feet long. Unpainted concrete floor, fly-specked walls, naked light bulbs, and I start thinking, how low have I descended? There's a Jewish expression, "Ech naflu hagiborim," how the mighty have fallen. Well, I don't know about the mighty part, but it was hard to take. Well, first day I came to work there, I walked to the back to the office, and there was a stench. And I'm glad we've all finished eating, but we were next door to Zalkin's Meat Market. And the place was rat infested, actually. And they'd eat poison, they'd die within the walls. And luckily, my father had a porter by the name of Henry. He knew where to sniff them out, and he knew where to break open the walls, where to get rid of the critter. Until the next time, it was a constant problem the entire time we were in that building, which was a period of 2 years. Made me look there. At any rate, one day a nattily dressed individual walked into the store. He introduced himself. He was from the South Carolina Tax Commission. Well, what did my father know about sophisticated bookkeeping? Absolutely nothing. And he asked my father for a set of books. Pop reached in the back pocket with a bunch of paper. It was mail that mailed them. The one page was blank. He used that for stationery. And he had a rubber band tied around. That was his entirely sophisticated set of bookkeeping. This fellow was a CPA. He never experienced anything like that in his life. And he he started out of the store. You can see he was chuckling. That was the first experience for him. And he told my father about getting some bookkeepers, CPAs, and he introduced us to some. Well, we lasted there for 2 years, and my father had bought four pieces of property over the years for one purpose only, so his three sons would have a place to open up a business in later life. They did that in those days, and I find I'm moving that direction. I think it's sort of a Jewish thing, always looking out for your children, your family, the next generation. Well, he bought three pieces of property, contiguous property, and then one day he had an opportunity to buy a building which is as big as all three of the others combined. It was operated by Mitchell's 5 and 10 cent store. And the fellow sold to my father. Papa came home to eat, and he told Mama what had happened. My mother said, "Did you record it yet?" He said, "No, but I'll do it next week when I get a chance." He said, "No, no, I'm not going to let you eat until you go down there right now on Broad Street. You get this thing recorded." And she went out. He got up, got it recorded, came home. Would you believe 2 days later, this fellow wanted to back out of the deal? He offered my father $10,000 profit simply to back out of the deal and retain his building. Well, if it wasn't for my mother's wisdom at that time, we would not have had a furniture business to go into in later years, all three of us. Incidentally, it was mentioned about this King Street store that exists now. Well, it no longer exists. We sold that building, and come Monday morning, I'll be going to our North Charleston store, which has always been our most profitable and number one store. Well, we stayed in a remodeled building, which is part of the four parcels of property my father owned. Had remodeled, looked very good. But other than that beautiful veneer, behind it, it was just a dilapidated building. And one night, we came home from the store around 7 o'clock, telephone rang, and Moses Rosowski, next door to our store, said, "Mr. Abe, I don't want you to be alarmed, but there's smoke coming out of your building. I think you ought to come down." Well, we raced down as fast as we could. When we got there, it was a raging inferno, totally in fire. And actually burned to the ground. It was a total loss. We had a lot of money invested into it. We thought we were finished. The very next day, the next morning, by the way, we still owed the Citizens Southern Bank at that. They owed them $6,000 from previous loans. Well, the phone rang. It was Hugh Lane, Sr., the CEO of the then Citizens Southern National Bank, a very well-known figure in Charleston, highly respected. And he said, "Abe, I saw you had a fire." Before he could say another word, my father said, "Look, Mr. Lane, you know I've borrowed money from you many times. I always paid you. You never had problems with me. Hey, please, just listen to me. I saw the information about this tragic fire. I want you to know whatever you need, I'll lend you whatever you need. Build a nice warehouse while you're at it." And that was actually like a breath of fresh air. We thought we were wiped out. But it was because my father's scrupulously clean credit record, always paid back his loans very quickly, even before he was due. And because of his reputation, and we were able to stay in the furniture business. There's so many other details I have, Rob, but I see how soon they finish their little presentation. So I'm forced to skip over a great deal of what I'd like to talk about. Well, we were always so heavily in debt in the furniture business because business was good. That's ironic, isn't it? Totally contrary to what you would expect. Because we've sold on credit primarily, and we keep putting accounts on the books, and it was capitally capital intensive to run a business like that. We were constantly borrowing money, and I was really worried, sick about how deep in debt we were, and I developed a stomach ulcer. My stomach had hurt for about a solid month. I did nothing about it, and then one day I just collapsed in the store. And the acid in the stomach had eaten through the lining, and it's what's called the peritoneal cap. I know all the whole physiology of it now. But they rushed me to the hospital, had surgery that same afternoon. 2 days later, I'm in the hospital, the tube running from the nose into the stomach. My father comes in and wants to know if I feel up to calling a few delinquent accounts. With Papa thought, the finished Papa, but I said I don't think so, and he didn't push it at all. And about 3 weeks later, I came out of the hospital, had a recovery from that stomach. I had a little trouble years later, not much, but I survived that. And but the whole problem was always surviving my father, not surviving. He was a very, very stubborn and very hardworking, very demanding, but at the same time, always thinking about our future. That was just the way it was for us back in those days. Now, come Monday morning, I'll be on my way to our North Charleston store. It's always been our best producing, most profitable store. And we have actually gone out of business on King Street. And we are the last of the Colasinos, I guess, on King Street, as you phrased it a minute ago, Leonard. I grew up next door to Leonard, and Leonard tried to live at our house. His father and I were first cousins. At any rate, I told you about the fire we had. We moved around the corner on number 10 Morris Street, a very small location, but it was the closest we could find our present location. And it was so small we could hardly put any furniture in whatsoever. At that time, a family by the name of Strasburger from Columbia had become jobbers for the Admiral line of appliances. After that time, we'd carry Philco, which is more desirable from the public point of view. But they offered us a tremendous deal that you couldn't turn down, a lot of free advertising. They had the responsibility of putting the line of appliances throughout the state. It was our responsibility to bring it to the city of Charleston and make it grow, which we did. We were so successful because they gave us a lot of free advertising that we had practically made enough money to pay for our new store, which was being constructed at that time. And Pop had made an arrangement with Dawson Engineering Company to incorporate all four stores in one building, which is where the present building is situated. And at any rate, we stayed in that building up even now, the building closed down. We were the last man standing, so to speak, in Charleston as far as furniture were concerned. And now that we are out of business, there is no traditional furniture store in existence on King Street, in case any of y'all are interested. I don't encourage it. Anyway, I stayed in that building for 71 years. Worked long hours. On Saturday nights, I used to work from 8 o'clock in the morning till 10 at night. It didn't bother us at all. Didn't have any lunch hour for a sandwich. That took care of me for the rest of the day. Same thing applied to my two brothers, by the way. I'm neglecting them. They also entered the business shortly after I did. And nowadays, we have three from the third generation who are presently running that business, two of whom are my grandsons. They're doing a remarkable job. They try to keep me from driving that store. They make it difficult for me to come there. They tell me that it's hazardous driving that distance on Rivers Avenue to the store. And they told me to get Uber. I think I'll get Missy to do it for me. At any rate, once we located in that particular store, we felt we had become well known again. We were off King Street for quite a while. We had a lot of gimmicks which we felt would create public awareness, public relations for us. And one of them was we'd have the radio stations. They would publicize the fact that we have easy credit. You can get most of our business, by the way, 90% was credit business. My brother Louis was the credit manager. They used to referred him as Loose Credit Lou. And that was supposed to encourage people to come and get easy credit.
Sammy, leave some time for questions.
Okay.
Leave some time for questions.
I will. I'm almost through. Okay. And we also have this thing that you hear now, the Dixie Don't Care. Everybody liked it except one young lady who was at St. Andrews High School. Her name was Dixie. Everybody's going around saying Dixie will do it because Dixie don't care. That was the only character. Then there was the hospital strike, where King Street was a deserted area. No car, no traffic, no vehicular traffic, and so forth. One day, a car stopped in front of King L store. It was the only car for blocks in any direction. Out walks an individual. He came in. He wanted to buy a dining room chair. I recognized him immediately. He was the lawyer for these people who who had this boycott of King Street and who was responsible for the hospital strike. He himself just decided to violate it either. His wife must have told him to go home. Don't come back without a dining room, sir. At any rate, he spent $2,000, walked out happy, we were happy. Thanks so much for that. Okay, I think I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay.
My name is Alan Livingston.
Alan, stand up.
My name is Alan Livingston.
Hold it close to you.
My name is Alan Livingston. Well, I have a story to tell you, but since I was born in 1929, what came before that, I can't remember. But they tell me that my grandfather came over here in late 1800s, and he had a pawn shop. And the pawn shop was on King Street, a little further up to where the store was now. And the pawn shop he didn't like because he didn't like people coming in to inspect all the stuff they had to record for the police department. So he turned that into a hardware store. How it happened, because World War I was over, and he went to the Navy Yard and bought up all the stuff when they were demolishing all the houses out there. They bought like the doors and the windows and all that stuff that they used in the house. So we went into hardware store with building material. Well, we were in the wrong place for the building material because you had to have a little bit of way to have a little way to put lumber. We couldn't have lumber. So that lasted for a while. And then after a while, what happened is everybody started moving out of Charleston, going up to the North Charleston, West Ashley, to get the hardware. And then the big companies came in, so we didn't see too many people except the locals. And the locals were very good because we had a different type of hardware store. We had one where everybody could find anything they wanted if they could wait long enough to we could find it. And so it was back there, and we did a lot of work for people who lived below Broad Street because all their houses eventually had to be jacked up, and we sold jacks. And it's probably still down there now. But never, and we sold paint and everything like that. So everything was good, and that was going on. Then all the big boys came in, you know, wrote the ones on, what's the name of the place, Lowe's and the rest of them. And you can't compete with that. And we went to the wrong place. So I changed the business from a hardware store to a lighting fixture company. And I stayed there a long time, and we had a very good, successful business. Then the lighting fixture successful got out of hand because they were all going back to the big business, big people, Lowe's and all that stuff. We had the specialty, we couldn't compete with that. And we wanted King Street. Well, King Street wasn't exactly the place where people would come down and buy lighting, come down to Charleston, try to find a parking place and all that stuff. And all the contractors, you know, they are what they call people who don't pay their bills too well. Had a lot of time collecting the money on that. So I closed it up, and I moved to Atlanta and opened up a lighting fixture company in Atlanta. Very, very good. And my father got sick, so I came back to Charleston and took over the store and kept it as it is today. But business was a lot different in your age. You know, we didn't have computers. You know, we had on the cuff. Everybody you knew, from father, mother, went back because they bought from our store for years and years and years. And so it was a good business, and it was like a social group anyway, and you knew most everybody. And King Street was different, you know, you didn't have to go anywhere to get anything. Across the street was an apartment store, on the street was a theater, anywhere you wanted to go. Now you can't even find a theater. Can't even find an apartment store unless you go somewhere where they're all closing out. So anyway, that was the story of mine. And glad to have you here. Good to see all you people. And hope King Street will make a comeback.
I'm sure you all feel the way I do. I just learned so much listening to the kings and queen. And I just want to point out one thing, because I think, Leonard, you explained something to me that I was going to ask about. I'm aware of how many Jewish-owned furniture stores there were on King, and many of our oral histories talk about how the merchants would collaborate with each other. If somebody needed a certain style and they didn't have it, they'd call up the street and get it from somebody else. And that other merchant would actually sell it to them wholesale.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, how do you explain this incredible collaboration or cooperation instead of competition? And you sort of maybe explained it, that they were all Kalashinas, which I didn't know. And by the way, Fanny Appel, who's Fan, her dad too, was a Kalashina.
Dale, there were 43 furniture stores on King Street in 1960.
Wow.
43, mostly Jewish owned.
Mostly Jewish, 95%.
And do you think that the old country origins of these people could account for this? Yeah.
I still practice that now. Anyone in my business that needs something that I have, I sell it to them at wholesale because I want everyone to be successful. We have to work together. We have to fight against the internet and everything else, but I want everyone to be successful on the street.
I think it was the Jewish community was very confined in the 40s and 50s. When I tell you it was between Spring and Calhoun, it was. Everything revolved around that. The synagogues, First Shalom and Beth Israel were in that confine. The Jewish Community Center, the Daughters of Israel, all of it revolved around. And I think they brought with them from Kalashin the need to stick together to protect one another. And I think that feeling transmitted to not only them, but their children. Unfortunately, today, life has changed. The great dispersion has occurred. And I think this tribalism has gone with it.
Mm-hmm. I like that word.
There's another reason why people exchanged merchandise at wholesale among merchants, and it was one of the reasons that Sam Kirstein brought up, is that the furniture business is very capital intensive. So if you were able to just get your money back some days, you would feel like you were making money. So you could sell it to one of the other vendors and recoup some of your money, because you could always buy another one. And if that person had the customer, then you were glad to give them the merchandise so they could sell that customer.
Very, very, very interesting. The whole history of business and the inside story, I think it's become a very hot topic now among academics, and you'll see in the next session that we're going with the trend and trying to put on an online exhibit about this very history. I have a dozen other questions, but I really want to throw it open to the audience. And also, if any of you has your own story, King Street story, please feel free to add it. Can I get somebody to help by passing around the mic? Okay. Bill.
Two quick stories. First of all, you talked about Kalashina. There was a Kalashina society which operated primarily from Kalashina. Although my father was president for like 12 years and he did not come from Kalashina. Anyway, it was a loan society, not in the school. And these merchants, their parents, many of them survived during the Depression because of Kalashina society. Stores then, well, there were about 30 stores were closed on Shabbos. But the others were open, and they opened until like 10 o'clock at night because people got paid on Saturday, and that was a big day for business. Anyway, I remember as a little boy when these people, some of your grandparents, were coming to the store and had my father $5 every Saturday. And we see another, he's giving the money. And I thought he was a bookie, maybe. Anyway, they were recorded by the treasurer in Yiddish. The books were in Yiddish.
We just 2 years ago acquired one from the Sokol family that had been upstairs in their store. One of the first ledger books of the Kalashina.
Many of these businesses survived during the Depression. Those 102 dog owns they got from the Kalashina Society. The other story I'll tell you, and many of you knew Sanford Olds, the blessed memory. I would never tell the story in public, but at Stanford, I heard him tell at least 20 or 30 times. Every time he was on somebody on the street, and I'd walk up and say, I want to hear a story about this boy's father. And he'd tell the story. He said, the first job I ever got was working for his daddy. Then China dishes were delivered by rail in wooden barrels full of straw. Well, Sanford's job was to unpack these barrels right on the street on King Street and take the dishes out. Anyway, the story is that when he came to my father for a job, my father said, I'll give you 10 cents an hour. And Sanford said, I'll take 10 cents. That's how he made 20 cents an hour. Our last letter is Barry Stifel's just published a 45-page paper in a historic journal on Charleston. It begins about 1823. The title is about cemeteries and synagogues, but much of it is a history of kings. Much of it. He mentions, he makes one error in the book. He says there were no alleys in uptown Charleston or downtown. Well, my block on King Street, there were two alleys that went from 10 Phillips Street to the back of the stores so they could deliver and receive furniture, you know, whatever, back on the street. And one of them was Pearlstein's Alley, which is Pearlstein. The houses and settlements on the alley were owned by the Pearlstein family. The other alley's name was Do As You Choose Alley.
Any other questions, comments? Yeah, right in front of you.
I have a question for Nikki Bluestein.
You want to just stand up so you can hear you.
Sure. Yes, I wanted to ask you about your, I think, great-grandmother, you said was a peddler.
She came to Charleston from Roma, Macon, Georgia, and she was a peddler for a few years. Then she opened up her first location, which is, I don't know where it was, but it was going south of my present location.
Okay.
And in 1907, she bought the building.
Okay. When she peddled, did she peddle in Charleston or in the environs of Charleston?
I don't know.
Do you know what she peddled?
No. I don't know.
Okay. It's so interesting to hear about a female peddler because so many of the peddlers in the United States were males.
Mm-hmm. It just blew my mind that she worked for my grandfather, didn't you?
Right. Right. Okay, thank you.
I'd just like to say that Diane
Vickers
is an historian from the upcountry, Furman, and she has written extensively on the Marshall history of Charles.
My name is Charles Bernstein. On the inside of the magazine, you see the pictures of several stories. One of them is the Magnum cash raising sale. That was my grandfather's store, located on the corner of King and Queen Street, diagonally across the street from Berlin's, and they were apparently very friendly competitors because the families have remained close for three generations. But I have an original of the newspaper advertisement for that cash raising sale. And very interesting, suits for $9, $12. Anybody would like to look at it, it's back here, at your convenience.
And Charles, we would love to borrow it and scan it for our website.
I'm going to ask you a question in a minute, but let me tell you this story. Is this working?
Yeah, just held it real close, Mike.
My great-great-great-grandfather is Rabbi Hirschvi Margolis Levin, who founded Brit Shalom Synagogue in 1852. And after the war between the states, it was so poor they could not pay him anything to act as rabbi. So he opened the hoop skirt factory right south of, used to be the Garden Theater, that red brick building, and then he moved across the street
And he was there until from 1865 to 1873, when he moved the family, my branch of it, to Baltimore. Now the family law is that he moved because of to get away from the Yankee occupation, which was 11 years after the war. They didn't leave until 1876. But it may have been that being a pious Orthodox Jew, and we have some of his sermons, which sound like Cotton Mather or Jonathan Edwards denouncing the Jews who opened their stores on Shabbat. So he was quite a rigorous character when it came to religion. When the styles changed from hoop skirts, which he approved of, to bustles, which emphasized the part of the lady that he thought shouldn't be emphasized, he went out of the crinoline business and went to Baltimore, and there he could earn his living as a rabbi, which he did for many years. In any case, he took the family out of Charleston, and then here I am back again after 100 years. I want to ask the panel if anyone ever heard of the store called Benchner and Vizanska. They were at the corner of King and Hazel. And I think they were there until they built that hotel and they took that property. It had been derelict for a while, but it was in your business, Steve. Lazarus. It was a...
I don't know.
No one seems to remember. I have photographs.
Say the name again.
Benchner and Vizanska. Yeah. Vizanska built that yellow brick house on East Battery and was, I think was an elective office, to be the inspector of the Port of Charleston. And he served in that office until the movie The Birth of a Nation was shown across the country, and that led to a rebirth of the Klan, and the Klan even became a presence in Charleston, and he was voted out in the next election because he was Jewish under Klan influence, and then 2 years later he voted back in because he lasted longer than the Klan. I don't know. I have photographs of it. I know that store was there, but nobody seems to remember.
We have a lot of it in special collections. And actually, we documented quite a lot. We document the houses that they live in. We document their house on East Bay that they built. And Sarah Fix, the wonderful researcher that we're going to segue to our next presentation, she has actually tracked where they moved up and down King Street.
Oh,
so there is a significant amount of office.
You don't remember because you're all jealous because they had the best store.
I think we don't remember because nobody's told it. One more question, and I hate to cut this off. We could go all afternoon, but one more question.
Hi, I'm Robin from Somerville. Look forward to seeing y'all tomorrow. That's not why I stood up here. Pinky, I believe it is.
Pinky. Yes.
Sorry. I met a gentleman from Monk's Corner for the first time a couple of weeks ago. His name is Manny Cohen, and he has a store of Barron's in. Is that a relation to you?
No. he's not. However, his store, Barron's, is next door to an empty lot. And that's where my grandfather's store in Monk's Corner was. And I forgot to say also, since people have said something about their families, I have been married to two Allens. I have three children. I have four grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. Ta-da!
I think that's a lovely note to end on, but let's give this panel a big round of applause. I hope we do have an opportunity to meet again, and that not all the Jewish stores on King Street will be closed.
I'm waiting for